what? His mom doesn't really care about me and that she's lazy.
This is an act of alienation and is harmful to children and can cause a lifetime of issues for the child. Issues as serious as anxiety, depression, substance abuse, and thoughts of or actual suicide.
What did I do to make mommy and daddy so mad at each other?
Whether or not your child reaches his or her full and healthy potential in life rests in your ability to be mature and put them first.
I love you, Mom and Dad.
Help spread the word to educate and raise awareness. Visit www.paawareness.org to find out more.
What an outstanding commercial. And this is Jilla Jeezy, and I welcome all of you to Family Matters. My co-host, Michelle Lawrence, is here, and we have a great guest tonight in Dr. Jane Major. But I wanted to tell all of you how excited I am to have been elected president of Parental Alienation Awareness Organization International this last Monday. And I'm so excited about leading this organization into 2011 because this is the year, and 2011 is the year, that we are going to change divorce culture and make parental alienation almost obsolete all across the world. We are just an organization that is so intensely promoting awareness of parental alienation and showing people how to not have adversarial divorce and promoting shared parenting. I'm ecstatic about being the president.
Congratulations. That is
Thank you. Such a big deal.
And you know what? They're lucky you accepted, because I can't imagine who could better really invigorate, like you're doing now, and with your book, The Look of Love, and everything. That's great.
Well, thank you,
congratulations,
Michelle.
Congratulations, also, Jane. I love your enthusiasm, Jill.
Well, I have to have enthusiasm because there are so many people, Jane, who are so sad and desperate at the loss of their children to parental alienation that there has to be some hope. And I know with PAAO, we can make it happen, and we're going to change things all across this world so that children don't have to suffer any longer. Michelle, I wanted to thank you again for being here tonight as my co-host, and I want to talk a little bit about your outstanding book, The Good Karma Divorce, which, as we all know, you are the best judge in the whole world, and you are...
Well, I would imagine a lot of people wouldn't agree with you.
Maybe I'm a little bit biased, but I think you're outstanding. I've watched you, and you are revolutionary in your courtroom, what you're doing with families and children of divorce, and the book, The Good Karma Divorce, is showing people how to change the way they think when it comes to divorce. Tell me what your goal was in writing your book.
Well, I had a few goals. It had occurred to me after starting a formula in my courtroom that there was a way that people were looking at the divorcing process that was incorrect on three major levels. The first one is that they believed that the court system would give them emotional justice, and that is not what the court does. It's not even what the court is supposed to do, and that they would get vindication and feel better when it was over.
Right.
So people give up power to the system, power to their lawyers, when most of the power still lays in their hands and they don't even know it. The second thing is that people believe that they can behave in any kind of way emotionally with chaotic emotions and without having to manage their anger and their sense of resentment. You have to give very deep attention to those things, or you will end up really devastated at the end of the case and you will have lost yourself. And the third thing is the belief that children are resilient. They do get older, but without upgraded parenting skills, the statistics are not good for the children. 50% of the children don't ever want to get married or have children.
Right.
So I think that's a pretty potent statement that something we're doing is not enough.
What an outstanding book it is, and I read it over and over to learn new things every time, and I recommend it constantly. The Good Karma Divorce, and it's available at your website. What's your website address?
TheGoodKarmaDivorce.com.
Well, that's easy. GoodKarmaDivorce.com. And, of course, my book, The Look of Love, is a novel about parental alienation and divorce, and it is also available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, as yours are, and on my own website, The Look
Jill,
of Love.
Jill, could I ask you something?
Sure.
Before we start with Jane, who is just a powerhouse of information, How do you find wherewithal to do the kind of outreach and active work that you do? I mean, could you share something with the listeners? Because there's two ways you could go with this. You could go the way you go, or you could be really devastated and paralyzed.
Well,
where do you find that in yourself?
You're right, Michelle. There's two ways to go. And I think the avenue that I've taken is the most productive for most parents who have suffered at the hands of parental alienation. And what I decided to do is make lemonade out of the vinegar that I had been served. And I want to work to rectify this situation for other families, parents, children who have gone through this. I know that everything I'm doing is not going to help me at all, but hopefully what I can do here in Springfield, Illinois can change the lives of other children and parents who are going through this horrible, horrible thing, bitter divorce, adversarial divorce, and parental alienation. And I think that unless you have a positive attitude and you are able to advocate for yourself and for your children on a daily basis, you will drop into despair and sadness, and you just can't let that happen. If you don't stay physically and psychologically happy, those children are never going to want to come back to a mess. So you've got to stay sane and positive and have that whole wherewithal that you're going to work towards a greater good. And what I'd like to say is that I want everybody to work together. We have all of these people who have these ideas that they want to change divorce culture on their own. It is not possible. What we need to do is band together so that our voice is heard by this nation and by this world, that these children cannot be used, their hearts, mind, and souls cannot be used as weapons any longer. Everybody needs to listen and pay attention, and we need to change what's going on.
So your activism is some medicine, some form of medicine.
It's a good medicine. You know, and it's very hard, Michelle, sometimes for me. This month is birthday month for me, for a lot of my children, and it is hard to practice what I preach. But you got to march on, and you got to do what you do. And can I tell you, I'm not sad sometimes. Can I tell you, don't cry? No, I can't tell you that, because I do. And it's there, and it's there every minute. And I think about my children every second of every minute of every day. But you got to work. And so that's what I'm committed to.
Oh, that's well said.
Now, we have this lovely woman who is hanging on the other end of this phone listening to us rant on. So let's talk to our wonderful friend who we both have had lovely dinners with in Los Angeles, Dr. Jane Major. She is such an outstanding person, first of all, but she has committed her life to parenting education and has been doing it since the 70s. Jane, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I am so glad you're here. Can you tell us, Jane, why you have devoted your life to trying to change what's going on?
Long ago, I realized that the number one cause that I wanted to impact was the amount of child abuse and neglect. And I decided that what parents need to know is what works. And that's been my primary focus, and that's why I wrote the book Breakthrough Parenting, Moving Your Family from Struggle to Cooperation, not to tell people what not to do, but what to do and what works. So I've been teaching classes for a good many years now, 27 to be exact. And along the way, mostly parents who were in trouble, serious legal trouble, came to me. And in my most recent years, started with fathers, and then a lot of mothers came, and they really had horrific family law issues. I didn't ever have a divorce. It was not my interest, but I started asking a lot of experts into my classes and learned from them. And I realized there's a body of knowledge here that everybody who's going through a divorce really needs to have. So I started collecting that material and sharing it and writing articles about it. And eventually I had so many clients that had parental alienation issues that I became an expert in that. I studied it, and I wrote several articles of my observations about it. And the one that I think you mentioned earlier is the article that I wrote for the Canadian Symposium for Parental Alienation Syndrome. That was in March of 2009. And I called it the Macabre Dance of Family Law Court, Abnormal Psychology, and Parental Alienation Syndrome, because it seemed to me that where is the reason reason? Where is the logic? Where is the compassion for people who are in this meat grinder called parental alienation? And when it gets so bad that the children are totally crossed the line and are now contributing to the alienation because they have been so brainwashed, and it is just such enormous tragedies going on in our courts. So I wanted to know what could be done to avoid this, to make it not a macabre dance among these entities. So I think, bottom line, that education is the key. When people know better, they do better.
Do you think, Jane, education of the general public, education of lawyers, education of judges, who are you educating that in the plan that will make it better for people who are going through the system?
The education is across the board. Number one, if parents actually know how to raise their children without abusing and neglecting them, we would have much healthier children, wouldn't we? And,
yeah, absolutely.
In terms of family law court, I know that we have become so entrenched in this multi-billion-dollar industry and the way that we have done it that it inches a lot of slight changes for the better that get introduced, but mostly we have an utterly dysfunctional system that doesn't do right by parents. It rarely does right by parents. Not as good a job as they could do.
Michelle, I want to ask you, as Jane comments on the system, and you are that system, and we know that you are, as I said earlier, revolutionary in what you do in your courtroom. How can you change those other people who are in family court to have the same feelings about divorce that you and I and Jane?
Well, you can't blame people for their perception that divorce court is a blame-based system. And that doesn't mean no fault. No fault means blame doesn't count. But internally, we are quite convinced that it does. And people really believe that they can get a leg up on the other parent if they can blame the other person and target them as a bad behavior or with negative qualities. Somehow, we think that puts us in a better position before the court. So when people get ready to divorce, they gather allies, they start propaganda, and they start demonizing the other side as the enemy. Not always, but far too often. And those are the people we're talking about. Those are the situations in this particular episode of our show. But people have to know that fault doesn't matter, and people have to be educated that the child needs both parents. Anytime the child doesn't have both parents, you're starting to talk about the beginning of deterioration on so many levels. People don't think this because people think, well, if my perception is a bad guy, child's better off without that person. Absolutely wrong. That's an ignorant statement from lack of education. Right, Jane? That's the main thing, which I could not agree more with.
Yeah, I think that the tendency when they're in a conflict that they don't know how to solve is to grab an attorney, and then they're off and running without really looking at what they're knowing. There's education again. Knowing that they have other options like mediation or experts, a profound number of experts out there with tremendous skills that can help people resolve their conflict without ending up in this horrific problem of being in family law court for a judge.
Well, yes, and a couple of thousand dollars with a family therapist might save hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees.
Absolutely.
It's money well spent. And insurance picks up a lot of family therapy anyway, and there's always family therapy available in hospitals in all communities.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, support groups that are free, breaking down, or even when you want to save the marriage. I would like to see that as the first thing that people do, to downgrade their anger and get some clarity. When people are in chaos, anything is possible. One small offense can trigger a cycle for years, and they need to get these skills for how to handle conflict. And we don't automatically have them.
Jane and
Jill, we don't have them. We need to learn them, and they're learnable, and you can find out what they are.
Well, I mean,
not just my book, but lots of books, tons of them.
Don't you think, Jane and Michelle, the unfortunate part is as we trickle down these families that don't have a mom and a dad and they're living like our parents used to live or the family from the 50s, we have less and less parenting skills. So it's so important to teach those skills as we move forward into this next millennium. What do you think,
Jane? Yeah, I think that's it.
if you really consider that this investment in children ends up with so much pleasure and joy or so much misery and sorrow and how it turns out, don't you think that parents would run, not walk, to the nearest parent education class? We don't think to train ourselves, to educate ourselves about how to raise children. I don't get it. I've never really understood that. I guess maybe because babies seem kind of easy, that people don't really invest in the long-term picture of how is this
right.
going to turn out.
We're
going to
take a caller from area code 806.
Hi, ladies. Actually, this is Amy Jill. I was just sending you an email telling you I'm on hold.
Hi, Amy. How are you? Amy is from Amarillo, Texas. She is an alienated mom. And Jane, you know her. She came out and was on the Gregory Mantel show with us. So welcome, Amy.
Hello,
Hi,
Dr. Major.
Fine. Good to hear from you again, Amy.
What's your question, Amy?
My biggest question is, how do you get the lawyers, family court, judges to basically, and both of you know my situation, get the other parent to participate in the education? When you're alienated by the other parent, there's no parenting classes, there's no mediation, there's no nothing. I'm going on 18 plus months and I haven't seen my boys yet. So, and no one's, when I do go to a hearing, there's nothing asked about how it's going. So the alienation kind of starts, it starts at the alienated parent, and it seems to be working its way all the way through the system.
Okay.
No,
can I answer in terms of the system, or do you want to go, Jane?
Jane, why don't you respond first, and then we'll go to Michelle.
So I think that the question is, how do you get the other parent to participate in some activity that's going to help the situation and not make it worse? Is that
And you had mentioned something about a body of knowledge that you have to have through going through a divorce. Are there something in place that you can go to the judge or to your lawyer to try to get some of these things done when the other parent doesn't want to participate in any of it at all?
What I advise my clients who are often in your situation, this has gone to court and that turned into just a terrible situation, is that I teach the healthier parent what kind of strategies are most likely to work, something that's going to heal the family, because this person thinks that I'm right. The only possible way that we have to change anything is to go to a judge and to get court orders in place where it'll help the situation where the children are involved with both parents.
Give or take about 16 symptoms or behaviors that are considered to make up parent alienation. And you need to file a petition with the judge. And I would suggest that you say, Judge, here are some behaviors. You don't even mention alienation at this point. Here are some behaviors. I really need your help to keep a watchful eye on this case. I had a good relationship with my child, and here are the ways it's degenerated, and here are the behaviors. If you don't take this case under your wing, there's a good chance the children will be destroyed. We need you to order immediate parent education class and order us into some sort of counseling where we continue to communicate. As soon as you see it, don't take it lightly. Make your roadmap or your blueprint or your chart of how these behaviors are building up so that the next time it happens, when you miss the third visit because the child has a flu or doesn't want to come, you can paint by numbers or pointillism. Little by little by little, you have to paint the picture for the judge. I wouldn't call it alienation. Some judges don't believe in alienation. And then by the time you get to trial, maybe you use the title and maybe you have an expert saying, here's the 16 behaviors. This is classic.
Well, I absolutely agree with you, Michelle, that you never, ever use the words alienation. You describe the behavior and saying, just do this and just do that is easy. But I know that Amy has been through every possible avenue she can climb in Amarillo, Texas, that has allowed her to be in front of a judge, and nothing has happened for her. I need you to recognize, and I know Jane sees it, that although you say, well, why didn't you do this, and you can do this, and this can happen, it doesn't always happen.
There are people who don't want to know.
I think what happens is that from judges on down, attorneys and therapists and mediators and parent educators and all of the professionals that would like to help just don't know what to do. There are four very serious personality disorders that people have in our culture. There are more than four that keep them. They're mentally very unhealthy. It keeps them from being locked. They're demented.
Yeah.
And they are so into themselves that they believe that they're right, and they are not willing to look at how they're wrong, because part of their illness is that they don't believe that they're ever wrong. They don't own that. So if you're dealing with somebody like that, there's not a lot that anybody can do.
Well, Amy, did you get psychological evaluations?
They've been done many times on me, not the family unit where the kids are at now, the new set mom, the father, the children, but they've been done on me, as well as drug tests.
Didn't order a family diagnostic evaluation just on you?
Just on me, based on accusations by my ex-husband.
Are you in a custody fight?
Yes, for 4 years now. So he's deemed me no longer the mother. He's told me that, and the stepmom is now the mother. They call her mom. Of course, I don't know.
Wait a second. Every jurisdiction in a custody fight, every jurisdiction has a provision for a complete evaluation of the family when there's a custody fight. There's no jurisdiction that I know of where that law does not exist. So to say that they only evaluated you without even evaluating the children or your ex-spouse is not consistent with any of the law. So if you filed for an evaluation and it was denied you, I would imagine that's appealable.
Attorney to file that if they just won't file it? That's what I'm saying. Is there a way to circumvent?
What you're saying is true, which it is, I have no reason to doubt it, but I'm just saying that you have a lot of rights here.
Michelle, I think I should tell you, this case has so many different nuances from the judge on down to the lawyer that represents the ex-husband, that you need to put on a really big pair of cowboy boots and go to Amarillo, Texas to even wade through the garbage that's gone on in this woman's life.
Well, what I'm saying is, talking to her, but I'm talking to everybody listening, to know that that is available. And are there always miscarriages of justice? Yes, there are, and they're devastating. But in the bigger picture, for the majority of the people, they should know that they have the right to get family evaluation in contested custody and in contested visitation cases. That's kind of my point.
Well, Amy, I hope this helped a little bit, and I will talk to you soon. You hang in there. Take this advice to heart, and we will update. Okay? Thanks so much. Thank you,
ladies. Good luck.
Bye-bye. Jane, there's a lot of talk in the chat room right now about narcissistic parents, and I want to go back and talk about the whole persona of an alienator and what that is. And Michelle had an interesting question earlier that I want her to ask you when we're done about when you're married to a narcissistic parent, not divorced. Talk about how to deal with them when you were divorced and you're up against this whole parental alienation thing.
I'd like to just reflect on the last thing with Amy, and that is people who are listening. We're talking about cases here of worst case scenario cases. You know, our family law system does do a righteous job by a good many families when they're going through divorces, and it doesn't end up being such a horrible situation. So now you're bringing up narcissists or borderlines or histrionics or other or sociopaths. These are people that don't have a conscience.
Right.
Think about it. Their purpose is to win by domination. Many times they're cruel, and they enjoy being cruel. So if you marry somebody like that, God forbid, or you're dealing with, I think the place to start is back to what I said at the very beginning. Educate yourself as to what that is about. Go Google the word narcissist and study it and find people who deal with that. I learned so much from Bill Eddy at his highconflictinstitute.com. He has tremendous information about how does this happen and what can you do about it. There are many experts. I say to my clients, you're not the first person that's had this problem. Do you realize that? And they say, oh, yes, I do. Well, let's find out what other people did that was successful. And what do you do with a narcissist? Well, every time he or she comes in the room, you bow your head in obedience to this wonderful person with such a high ego that wants to be waited on hands and foot. You know, the more you confront them with being real, the more frustrated they may get because they see themselves as the king or the queen, the royal person in the family.
A lot of times a narcissist can appear to be just very loving and nice and kind and considerate. There's all different varieties, aren't there?
Yeah,
not everybody is so classically.
This is cult behavior. And every single person on the planet ought to learn how a cult works. And the first stage of cult behavior is love bombing, where the person is being seduced so cleverly that in the seduction, they're isolating them from what is familiar. And they start working on their brains with brainwashing. So people say they said everything, they did everything. I thought I was the greatest person in the world. They would love me forever. And they believed all the promises. I want to write a book called Spider and the Fly, How to Tell if a New Relationship is Likely to Turn into a Disaster. Because so many people...
Really? How would you tell? Give us a clue. Give us a coming attraction.
There's back to education. There are these archetypal people that exist in our society that present themselves in all their grandeur, and we get sucked in. If we knew that they existed, these kind of difficult people existed, we would be more aware when we're being
sucked. So when you're first falling in love, what would you look for to tell whether somebody, it might be narcissistic? After all, they're telling you your hair looks great. They love being with you. It's so wonderful. Nobody makes them laugh. They never felt so right. And that's the love bomb. So how do you look beyond that?
That's it. Well, teach people to have a healthy skepticism and to get to know these people. Don't run off to Las Vegas 2 weeks after you meet somebody and think that's going to work out.
What's the difference between married to a narcissist and married to a borderline?
Not really much difference. There isn't that much of a difference. How you deal with them is still it's the same. One thing most people do is that they become very passive. They try to be logical and solve problems with them, and they get hit with a 2x4 between the eyes. Think that hurt.
Constantly.
So
you constantly get hit by a 2x4 and realize it, because I think I was so young, but it was there all the time. And now at 48, it's very clear to me what was happening the entire time. You can't go back.
Well, getting a little bit more sophisticated, I think. I think we are. But it seems to me, in sitting on the bench, that either borderlines are being diagnosed more or they're more prevalent. Is it possible that, is it organic and transferred in the DNA?
You know what? There's a phenomenal new research study that Bill Eddy pointed out to me, that there is a potential increase in the number of people who are personality disordered people. And one of the reasons is that we've had this 50% divorce rate for a good many years now. And these children are growing up in families that we expect then to form their own families and have it be a functional family. And they've never had a role model of what that looks like. And if they grew up in high conflict families, then they turn into high conflict people.
I wanted to mention that there's a couple of people in the chat room talking about it, a book that Michelle had recommended to me that I didn't know about called The People of the Lie by Scott Peck. And what an outstanding book that really lays out the whole characteristic of a narcissistic person. And it is just for healing human evil. 814 area code, welcome.
Jill, that must be me, but I didn't press 1 to talk. I just am.
That's okay. Who is this? What's your first name?
Cindy from Pennsylvania.
Hi, Cindy.
Kind of like to put it to the people that don't want to make change because stuff is not affecting them, and there's so many people like that in our society. Just today, somebody was telling me about a professor who has done things the same way for 32 years and in a very awful way at the university I go to. So what are people's motives to want to make change as far as our kind of situation?
I think a lot of people, anybody in this business sees that it's dysfunctional. And back when when the stakes are really high and you have personality disorders and so on, I think a lot of folks, frankly, don't know what to do. And that there aren't, like in the case with Amy, there aren't any easy answers. But a professor at a university, for God's sakes, nowadays students grade these professors. There are online programs, but it's or whatever. They make a lot of comments about their professors. And that's a different...
I'd like to say one thing in response to Cindy. And throughout history, from the beginning of time, all change that takes place is a response to one person getting screwed. That's how it does. Mm-hmm. And usually, or groups, religions, things like that. But usually, that's who catalyzes. When it's not affecting you, you go and fight another battle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just human nature.
Right.
But if you can be enrolled, if somebody's hurting, if it's not you, it's somebody that you care about, and you can really spell it out, if you're charismatic enough, like Jill, who's now president, not to just flatter her, but that's the kind of thing it's going to take to bring other people along to educate them about the problem. But some people find change very threatening, and it destabilizes their whole reality. Since the beginning of time, you've had to fight that. So it's a good point.
Cindy, thank you for calling.
Thanks, Jill.
And stay tuned, okay?
Uh-huh.
All right, we have another caller from the 321 area. I'm going to plug them in right now. Welcome to Family Matters. What's your question tonight?
I have a question, and I have a comment.
Sure.
I've been listening to this show now over a period of time. And what I've heard is that you can contest alienation by bringing your calendar and journal into the court, that you can change attorney, that there's jurisdiction for this and there's jurisdiction for that, and that you can educate the judge. But the alienating parent, I don't think, do you, will get to alienate the parent if the judge doesn't turn one of the parents or other into a visitor. And when the judge turns one of the parents into a visitor, and that parent loses his constitutional rights and his God-given family rights to see his children, and suddenly he can only visit his kid, but the next door neighbor can see the kids every day, and the step parent can see the kids every day. What happens to that relationship without an alienating parent? And when you have an open door like that, then is it not true that somebody who is even leaning toward alienating is going to walk through that door because they have the judge, the police, the attorneys, the DCF, and everybody else that they can use to continue
Okay, that's the question. Jane, do you want to comment? And then Michelle?
I'm going to let Michelle comment first.
Okay.
I think you bring up a really interesting and a really valid point. You're talking about the noun alienation, not necessarily the verb to alienate. That part of what actually happens creates an alienation. And even in more amicable divorces, unless both parents have real solid input, even if one parent is not a classic alienator, but tends to malign one parent or tends to want more time and more authority and some kind of domination over the other parent, it can have alienating effects that can be very damaging as well. So it's on a continuum. And I think your question is good because you bring that out. And that's why we need more of a core philosophy about how both parents are so important and that one doesn't own a child and another one just visits.
Well, talk is cheap, but when you give a person 2 weekends a month and they are a parent, they are no longer a parent. At that point in time, they're either an egg or a sperm donor. They're not parenting those children. They're not there for character development. They're not there to discipline those kids. They're not there to help them with their homework.
You know
they are
what,
nothing
though,
but a bad carrying visitor.
Hey, listen up. You're preaching to the choir here. Oh, my. Okay.
Well, I have a lot of the fathers that come into my program that are, you know, singing the same kind of choruses here in my classes. And what I say to them is, be damn grateful for the time you have. And while this is not a perfect picture, it's not as good as it should be, people who get into shoulda, woulda, coulda, rather than looking at what is, will tear themselves to pieces. I had a dad in my class that had his son at the beginning 10% of the time. And he said, for all of the time that I had him, he had 100% of my attention and devotion. And he grew that into more time. He never got past 30%. The mother was a horrible, hideous, terrible woman, and she still is. But this kid has turned into such a fine young man because of the father, because he stayed and he continued to fight for this boy. So if you're to get into judgment of the system and to get into how bad and awful and horrible and terrible it is and it's getting worse, isn't going to help anything. Work with the time you have, and yes, you are the father. You are not just a sperm donor. You are an important person in these children's lives. And be grateful that you have the time that you have and work on increasing it. But don't malign the fact that you have this healthy, positive relationship with your children. Other people,
Jane,
other dads don't have any relationship with their children. None.
You are so absolutely right, Jane. And I want to say to this guy, he has not had the epiphany that many people who have been alienated or who have very little time with their children. First of all, I'd like to say I would be glad to have every other weekend with my children right now. I mean, I would kill for that time just to see. So this guy has every other weekend. I would kill for that. But what I'd like to say to him is, and I've had this talk with Alec Baldwin on three different occasions, You have to get the idea in your head that you're not going to be angry anymore. And by buying Michelle's book, The Good Karma Divorce, that will help you do that. You need to make the step forward that's going to allow you to be an advocate for yourself, for your child, and for this entire movement. Direct that angry energy towards helping other people, because it is not helping you. You are making yourself physically and psychologically ill, and it is not helping you.
I'd like to add on to that. I just would like to say that I understand why people get angry and frustrated, but your question is going to be, what's more important, your children's happiness or you being right about your anger? You may be very right about every single thing you say, but attitudinally, it's going to affect the children in a way that's going to make them feel very unsafe, because they don't feel like that kind of anger is something they could manage, and they take it on themselves. They always think they did something wrong, and maybe they could have changed it. So if I had one thing to say to people, it would be to downgrade the anger and say to yourself, do I do anything or say anything about their other parent or the system that would make the child feel unsafe, that would make the child feel harmed in any way? Would I rather be right, or would I rather my children be happy, is always a dispositive question.
Absolutely. Jane, do you want to comment?
I want to comment on the most wonderful people that I discovered very recently. In fact, we did a TV show together on the Gregory Montel show yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Divorce
mm-hmm.
Detox, A Cure for a Broken Heart. And they specialize in divorced parents that need to heal from the trauma of divorce. I was completely surprised to find out marriage and family therapists do not specialize in grief recovery. And these people do. They are excellent. If the people look up Divorce Detox, they will
divorce
find
detox.
A powerful resource.
Got it. All right, we're going to take one more caller, and then we're almost done, which has just flown by. So hang on just a second. Area code 970, welcome.
Hi, Jill. Hi, Jane. Hi, Judge Michelle. Thank you so much for all your work and education and advocacy for all our children and these painful situations. And I love what you just said about divorce detox, because I just can see in my situation with my alien ex that I don't know how much the awareness there is of what he's actually doing to the kids because of all the anger and vengefulness. And I wonder if a program like that could help someone who's an obsessed alienator. I hope so.
What do you think, Jane?
I think it's going to tend to help the person who's been alienated, the person who, such as our last caller, and anybody going through a divorce, they need to go through of how to heal themselves from the multiple loss that they experienced in that marriage and around their children. It's just huge. And
I know.
And there is a procedure. It isn't therapy. It's an educational procedure that people go through. I've done it. I took their training years ago. I was so impressed with but this is just on Grief Recovery Institute, but this is on divorce detox. Detox divorce. Phenomenal.
Well, you know, I gave a speech to an entire audience that was nothing but therapists and psychiatrist and psychologist, and I said to them, what the world really needs is something that treats post-traumatic divorce syndrome. It's going through the process of divorce in and of itself, and it's not just, and they said they didn't know that it existed, but they thought it should, because it's not just the pain of losing the marriage, the loneliness, the fear, the insecurity, the not knowing who you are, the identity. It's not just that, but it's the divorcing process itself, which is losing your ability to have privacy, being treated as if you're a bad parent, and giving depositions and having to give testimony and going in court and seeing your spouse for the first time after 7 months, all extremely traumatic and never addressed and never healed. And so years later, people are still smarting from the divorcing process because they haven't done the adequate healing.
Well, Margie, thanks. I appreciate you calling in from Colorado, and you have a great night, and tune in for a few more minutes. We're almost done, but thanks for so much for calling.
Thank you.
Thanks, Margie.
Jane, I have a question for you from the chat room, and it is, what do you think are the three best things to do so that judges, social service agents of the court, and others get it?
I help my clients get clear about what it is that they want other people to get. People are so emotional that it's like their brains are scrambled. So I have them go through a simple device of drawing a large triangle on a piece of paper, and then take an inch down and draw a line across, 2 inches down, draw another line across. The first triangle at the top is, what is your goal? What do you want to accomplish here? And the second one is, what is your reason for wanting that goal? And the third is, what is your evidence? How can you prove what it is that you're saying is true? And that device, that simple triangle, has done so much to clarify people about how they ought to approach their case.
I like that. I like all of those things. And I hope everybody got that down so they understand what Jane is saying, because you make so much sense, Jane. You have common sense. Jane, tell us, how can people get a hold of you if they want to employ your services?
Well, you can find me at my website, which is stopparentalalienation.org. I've written several articles on this subject, and all my contact information is there. I also have a website called breakthroughparentingservices.org, where my parent education material is there. I want to say another thing that a person can do to prepare, and that's to do a chronology of what's happened in their family, a simple list of the date and what happened. No explanation, short, simple, but what happened from the time of this relationship beginning through to right now. That can is such a valuable tool to help sort through a person's mind. They can give it to another person and give it to the judge or to their attorney or anyone that's going to help them, and the person can read it and get upbeat in just a few minutes. A chronology is so valuable.
Do you think, Jane, it's important to keep a daily journal and have the chronology also in pictures of the relationship that you once had with your children?
I think the chronology in terms of the court case, the journal, ought to be the pivotal issues that are happening. A lot of people use the journal just for emoting, getting their emotions out, but I think people ought to keep track of what's happening, and that's what their chronology can help them do.
Michelle, when someone...
I just want to say one thing. That journal is subject to discovery, so tell your lawyer to give you the assignment to keep a journal so that it can be work product and not subject to discovery.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because people don't realize that, and all
and
of a sudden...
Anything that you write, picture that being in front of a judge. It can help you screen the kinds of things that you put in writing.
It's true, but when you emote and brain dump to downgrade your anger, as people do, and you wake up in the middle of the night and you want to unload it, put it on paper, but get rid of it, unless it's something that you are going to hand to your lawyer.
So,
and then it's work product.
So you need to invest in a shredder, is what you're saying.
Here's the thing about writing. It activates another part of your brain that's called the problem-solving part of your brain. So if you keep it only upstairs, it goes circular and never gets tracked out in the way that it can if you write it. If you write and think, then you have two areas of problem-solving working together synergistically, and it's far superior to just thinking about solutions.
You're right.
Mm-hmm.
I want to just touch base because we just have about 3 minutes left, and I wanted, Jane, if you would just give us your contact information one more time.
Okay, Jane Major, and I have two websites. One is stopparentalalienation.org, and the other one is breakthroughparentingservices.org. And just Google my name. I'm everywhere.
Okay. And Michelle, you are at the goodkarmadivorce.com, and of course, such a great tool for anyone who's getting a divorce or anyone who has conflict in their life, and then the Book of Love, dealing with parental alienation and divorce. Just Google us all, and we're all there, and we are working diligently, the three of us, on trying to change divorce culture all across the United States and now the world. I thank you both for being with me tonight. And I know, Michelle, you're in New York and you're in California, Jane. I'm in the Midwest, so we have the whole nation covered. And you two are just doing amazing things for families and children who are going through these horrible problems. Keep up the good work. I can't say enough about you. So, guys, 90 seconds left. Have a great, great evening. And thank you for helping everybody you've helped tonight. Michelle, do you have any last words?
Yes. Where would they find on the website to see what our next episode is going to be?
Syndicatednews.net. The next episode is going to be Joel Goldberg Symposium out of New York. Have a great
Thanks,
night.
Thanks, Jill. Thanks for everything, and congratulations again. And thank you, Jane. Nice talking to you always.
Thank you. Bye-bye, folks.
Thanks, Jane. Bye-bye.